Hello, everyone. Merry Christmas. Thanks for coming. I'm afraid to announce Maniacs Live will not be happening this evening as planned because the script isn't good enough. I'll be flying to Brussels tomorrow, try and get some better material before rescheduling the show, possibly for January. The rest of the team are right behind me as I do my best to respect the will of the Patreon backers and deliver a Maniacs Live in which we are point makers, not point takers. If the negotiators do not give me the smooth segues and topical gags I asked for, we must be prepared to walk away and give the Leicester Square Theatre slot to a popular panel show comedian. No, I've changed my mind again. We'll do it. I'm Dorian Linsky, and I've got three Romaniacs regulars with me. Roz Taylor is the research manager for the Truth, Trust and Technology Commission and an in-depth Brexit wonk. This is her first Romaniacs Live since February, so she's rejoining the show like a freedom of movement Robbie Williams rejoining Take That. Hello, Roz. We hope you're back for good.
Cheers.
Obviously, you didn't think Brexit was a good idea, but did you ever think the negotiations would turn out quite like this?
Yeah, I did, actually. I thought that we would gradually realise, it would gradually dawn on people just what a shit idea this was. And then there'd be a kind of scrabble at the end, and that's actually what's happened, pretty much.
And we thought that David Cameron was meant to be the kind of essay crisis prime minister and Theresa May was meant to be the head girl. Not so much.
It's the head girls who are the most screwed up ones.
That's what you sound like, you know.
Do you speak from personal experience?
Yeah. Oh, God, no. I was anti-head girl.
Also here is Ian Dunt, editor of politics.co.uk, regularly seen on TV news in the beloved role of exasperated Brexit man. Hello, Ian. How are you?
Hello, very well. Thank you. Actually, not really that well. It's been fucking terrible, but yeah.
In shock, didn't know what to do.
They clapped. What? You're our Marvel Comics man, and
here it comes.
Next year's Avengers movie, which is going to be about going back in time to stop a catastrophic decision that makes half the population disappear, will be called Avengers Endgame. Is this Theresa May's Endgame? Like how?
I really see what you've done here.
How much? Do you see what I did? I took a thing from over there and a thing from over there and I put them together.
It's always the same thing as well. It's always like basically every week. It's just like, here's a comics thing and here is your catastrophic political life. it is her endgame. I used the endgame for the Brexit thing a couple of times and I'm now glad to see that Marvel Studios is catching up with me. I also kind of feel like the Avengers films... you're going to have to stop me if I start talking about this for more than 7 or 8 minutes. The Avengers films have kind of like... sort of replicated politics for a while. So 2012 was when the first one came out, full of hope. We're having the Olympics, everything felt quite good. Then there was Civil War, right after the Brexit vote. Then you had sort of like Thanos arrives and it's sort of like the death of all hope. That was this year. And then there's Endgame. So it doesn't look like things are going to work out terribly well for us next year, if my theory is indeed correct.
I think they'll sort it all out in the next film. It'll be fine.
It's possible. It is possible.
Mm. We just need the same script writers as them. And finally, thank God we have a professional performer with us. Ingrid Oliver is the actor, comedian and director, possibly best known as Osgood from Doctor Who. And she wrote and directed that fantastic viral video earlier this year in which the very British Reserve cracks and people end up overturning tables in restaurants and throwing dog poo back at people who left it on their lawn. Hi, Ingrid.
Hello. I feel like I'm weirdly close to you. I'm gonna move here. I'm slightly there.
That's good. Is everyone
that feels
spaced
more.
Out?
There we go.
Whew. You were born in Germany, were you not?
Yeah.
Do the Germans perhaps have a word for taking pleasure in the misfortune of others that might be relevant?
Not that I know of, no. Yes, they do.
Yeah. Are you one of those fortunate dual passport people who can just get out of this?
I am. And weirdly, I don't know why, like this is like an episode of Show and Tell. I brought it with me. That's what it looks like, people. Yeah. Oh, no, it's mine.
It's so red.
It's actually almost identical to the UK passport. I got it immediately as soon as Brexit, as the referendum vote became known. and I got my passport, and I felt really guilty because I almost, when I got it through the post, it was very efficient, the German embassy. It was a matter of, I went to this embassy, a matter of minutes, had it all stamped, done, got it sent in the post, no problems. And I almost cried when I got it because it sort of symbolically meant quite a lot. Yeah, I could open my croissant shop in Paris if I ever choose to do that. But I also felt quite guilty that my other friends don't have it. So I felt like Kate Winslet in the Titanic when she's on that piece of wood. And I was like, I've got my passport. Everyone else is Leonardo DiCaprio. And I'm like, see ya. Sorry about that. Yeah, I had survivor's guilt.
So it's a very pressured week, month, year, epoch. And I want to ask... what are we doing? Are we doing anything in the way of self-care? Is there anything that we're doing to alleviate Brexit stress?
I use alcohol. Okay. It's always worked very well for me. There is the switching off phone thing, but I don't have like a sort of set regime. But there is like a sense on the Saturday, Sunday of I really don't want much contamination with news. And I'm kind of astonished. I see lots of my colleagues, like sort of other political journalists, who wake up on the Sunday. They're clearly watching, you can tell by the tweets. So they're clearly watching sort of political programming from about 8 a.m. And that will carry you through till about 2 p.m. on Sunday. And you're like, really? Is that really what you want to do with the Sunday? And so there's at least, like, as long as you kind of just give yourself the weekend, if you can, it kind of, you don't feel some of the toxic hate, anxiety and despair that you do on Monday to Friday, and that sort of helps out.
That's good. Roz?
Yeah. Strictly, weirdly, does it for me occasionally. I can't watch the whole thing because I can't bear those people. But those women. But, no, I can't bear the screaming and the shouting. I just watch the dances and the clips, and then that's enough, and that's like a three-minute hit of pure non-Brexit. That's how I'm dealing with it.
Then, Ingrid, apart from your croissant shop, do you...
I've realised that, like Ian said, there was a point, because as an actor, sometimes you don't work. Shocker. And I was spending hours and days just reading, consuming Brexit news, as though that would help somehow. As though me understanding everything would help the situation. And I've just realised that I can step back from it. There have been a lot of times when people know that, for example, you do Romaniacs, or that, you know, that you're interested in Brexit, they sort of feel that they have to talk about it a lot. So in big groups of people, I find people sort of going, well, what about this? And I've allowed myself to not contribute particularly to those conversations anymore, because a lot of the time it's with people you're not going to convince anyway, or people that are just... this is very bad of me to say, but you know that they've got bit snippets of things from places and they're not... true, and for me to sort of personally rebut everything is exhausting. God, I sound like so precious. What a precious... I can't give myself as much as I would like. I've stopped giving myself so much.
I was at my daughter's Christmas fair on Saturday, and one of the dads came up and went, Brexit, eh? And what I meant to say was, well, you know, I do think about it quite a lot, and I've got this podcast and energy, you know, so sometimes I try not to think about it, and I just went, I'm off duty. Came off a little blunt, but I'm on duty now. There are probably a lot of regular listeners in here who've just come along for the hits. Ian on WTO rules, me on Orwell, that sort of thing. But if you don't listen to the podcast, and you're here by mistake, we usually talk about a handful of current Brexit news stories and then a couple of longer topics. Tonight we're going to try to look forward to 2019. Woo-woo! What to look out for, what we can change, and how the year when we supposedly leave the EU will change British politics. And that, so that everyone's not completely depressed, we're also going to talk about what we call the proto-Brexit canon, which is things that may have paved the way for Brexit. Is Britpop really to blame, or was it Jerry Halliwell's Union Jack dress, or the opening credits of Dad's Army? We will find out. And because it's Christmas, we've got a special gift for each of the panel under our EU-funded Brexmas tree, just covered in snowflakes. We could not negotiate a bigger one, sadly. What will Father Brexmas have brought, everybody? I also want to point out that there are signs saying no photographs, but that's famous people say that. So you can take as many photographs as long as... We don't have probably you won't want to take videos, but we don't have a Netflix special that would be ruined by videos. So it's okay.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Thank you. Yes, not yet.
Perhaps if they answered their emails. The Leicester Square Theatre is famous for stand-up comedy. Please enjoy our evening of Britain's sit-down tragedy. Firstly, the topic dominating the news today, if you don't know if you've seen it, is the meaningful vote, which this morning, we wrote the first version of the script, was still supposed to happen tomorrow, and yet not. Theresa May said she'd bring the country together, and she has. Pretty much everyone thinks she's a terrible Prime Minister. Last we looked, she couldn't even get the votes to delay the vote. The Commons Brexit Committee says the deal is a huge step into the unknown. The Tory writer claiming that if and when May loses the vote, she must step down. So there's a leadership contest for us all to look forward to. And Jeremy Corbyn insists he'd do a better deal, but he won't say how or what will be in it, because he's a man of mystery. Ian, in terms of sort of monumental parliamentary weeks, you know, from history, are we in, without sounding too like the day to day, is this history? Are we in history right here? Like, well, how does this sort of measure up? What would be the sort of precedent for this kind of...
Oh, I asked that today, actually, because I was trying to think, like, what could be more catastrophically fucked up than what we're looking at? And I was thinking, like, it's not Suez, not at all. Like, Suez was pretty minor compared to this. It just involves a bunch of sort of humiliation, but we're way past humiliation at this stage in the current, you know, way past it. Black Wednesday. I mean, Iraq sort of is, it has consequences that were bigger than this, I think, because also not just in terms of lives, but in terms of, you know, what that does to Western foreign policy, what that does to trust in government, and potentially that goes further. But honestly, when I was thinking just in terms of just pure, undistilled, systematic cock-up, I was sort of thinking, like, I don't know, rump parliament of the late 17th century is, like, pretty much, you'd just be like, now, everyone there was fucking up badly, and it ended up with a military dictatorship. So that was, like, not a great moment for English politics. And I sort of think, like, just quantitative level of cock-up, we're about there right now.
And if the deal happens, if the vote happens and it is voted down, there's so many... I mean, I know we're in this kind of William Goldman kind of nobody knows anything kind of situation. But what do you feel at the moment is going to be the most likely consequence of it being voted down?
Oh,
and does the fact that she's put it back make it less easy for her to survive it being voted down?
Maybe. I think I don't know how to answer any of those questions, so I'm going to answer a different one. today she did probably what was the smartest thing for her, which is just delay. And she's defined by that tactic, really. It's all she has done for 2.5 years. If there's a problem, it's seemingly insurmountable, so you just delay and put it off for another day. And now we keep on thinking, finally, we've got to the day. In fact, like yesterday, under any criteria, was going to be the fucking day. And then it's like, oh no, she's delayed it again, so it's still not going to take place. And yet, that probably was the right thing for her to do, in that it was really going to be rather difficult for her on the other end of that. And I can assess that by virtue of how positive I felt about what was going to happen tomorrow. Because I really felt like lots of the options that we explore, whether it's second referendum or extending Article 50 or anything else you think about, feel to me politically contingent on having defeated her deal first. And you can see that by the fact that Corbyn didn't want to do the no confidence attempt today. Because there's, and you know, everyone's taking the lesson off Rees-Mogg, you know, cocking up with the 48 letters. Because it's just like, that wasn't the time, right? The time isn't before the deal has been voted down. It's once the deal is voted down, all sorts of options present themselves. Now, she has pushed that away. And I think today was like some of the worst news we've seen in Brexit for some time, when everything seems to be going in our direction, because you're putting off that moment when we can start making our own propositions, because her proposition has demonstrably failed.
Roz, is there any meaningful way the EU will allow the deal to be amended? I mean, what's she hoping to get from going back?
It's really hard, because she's talking about getting something more meaningful on the backstop. But then that just shows that she doesn't understand what the backstop is, because the whole point about the backstop is it has to exist. And anyway, let's not get into the backstop right now. But I don't see what else she can do. I mean, there's talk of her updating the, rather than the withdrawal agreement, which would be what we agreed with the EU, of her updating the political declaration. But what the hell difference is that going to make? We all know it was tosh anyway, and entirely aspirational. So I don't see how she can possibly turn round that many MPs in Parliament by whatever she does.
And where is the... We have in the Rainiac Studio a panic needle, which swings towards and away from. That's what we spent all the patrimony on. It's very high tech. And it swings towards No Deal and then away from No Deal. Where is the... It's also too fragile to transport to the stage. Where is the No Deal panic needle after the kind of the amendment?
Actually, I don't think No Deal is any more likely. I just think we're getting into an end game where we are starting to realise just how crucially awful everything is, and how, you know, and time is ticking on. And as March approaches, the pressure becomes more intense not to go for No Deal, because we're finally realising what No Deal means. You know, The Economist last week finally got around, week before last, finally got around to doing a What Do You Oh No Deal Means thing. I mean, they should have done that 2 years ago. You know, it was shocking that we have not got round to doing to looking at what No Deal means, because everyone said it couldn't happen. And we had, unfortunately, to get to the stage where we were talking about it happening for us to come to grips with it. So... yeah, I think it's no more likely. I hope it's no more likely, please. You know.
Ingrid, Esther McVeigh says she'd be up for leading the Tories, much as I would be up for headlining Glastonbury. I'm waiting. Now, obviously, there's a whole murderer's row of candidates to unite the nation. Who have you got your eye on?
Gove Ledsam. I'm not a Conservative, so I don't have my eye on any of them. But as a Remainer, I would, you know, the people that I would like to lead the Tory party as a Remainer are not people who are leaders and who will never get the leadership. People like Sarah Wollaston or, you know, Justine Greening, who have showed some conviction and courage on the matter of Brexit. They will not, as far as I can see, I don't think there's any chance of them. They're not leaders. You know, Sarah Wollaston is a very good backbench MP. But it's interesting, isn't it? What would happen? Because presumably, if a leadership contest is forced, that means that that people have to field candidates from both sides of the spectrum, presumably, or from all sides. There's many sides now. It's a hexagonical. Yeah, it's got a lot of bloody sides. Because you know, you'd have people like the Anna Soubrys who are maybe leaning towards a Norway-style deal. Then you have people who are just No Deal Brexit, the Jacob Rees-Mogg's, and then you have people who would like a second referendum, like Anna Soubry. So who would win out of those people? I don't know, because presumably Theresa May, to her credit, but she's the fact that she's postponed this deal, I mean, she's clinging on for dear life. And in some ways, I admire that, because it's like, well, if the vote had gone ahead tomorrow and she'd lost and there was a leadership election, she presumably believes she's the person best placed to deliver this. So whether that's a misplaced sense of duty to the country or not, I don't know. Who would come after her? Fuck knows.
Well, presumably, I mean, there's part of me that would like to... I mean, obviously, I don't really want to see a hard Brexiter Prime Minister, but I would like to see them fuck it up. Yeah. And own it, and not be able to say that, you know, stealth Remainers ruined it for them.
Who would they... They would have to offer someone up. Offer yourself. Because they could... presume, you know, as you say... If they did manage to become leader of the Tory party, it would then be on their shoulders to deliver all the things that they promised.
The month-long David Davis premiership. Just a comic interlude in British political history.
I think we overstate this thing about them ever owning shit. They never will. Like, you know, Theresa May took over. She gives them everything. She gave them the Foreign Office, which is generous. She gave them an entire Brexit department of... God knows what purpose. She gave them the entire international trade department. She gets these prominent Brexiters. And at the time, if you remember, everyone was like, oh, she's being terribly clever, isn't she? Because she's making sure that they own it, right? You know, they've got to do... Have they owned it? Have they fuck? You know, like they run. Boris Johnson and David Davis speak as if they literally never held those positions for 18 months.
Acted as if they didn't hold.
Yeah, well, they did. Yeah, yeah. To be fair. So there's just no. They never will. And even if they happen to be in the position all the way through, as Liam Fox is now. I mean, Liam Fox still speaks as if he is simultaneously the leader of the opposition and the government minister. And even if they were there, they would eventually just blame Brussels, or they would blame immigrants, or they would blame a fifth column at home, the Remainers, the Ramonas, who've destroyed it. They will never own a goddamn thing. They never, ever, ever will, because they're incapable of seeing their own failings. If they would have took a good, hard look in the mirror, they'd realise that they were the people that had done this to the country, rather than those who they actually end up blaming. Oh, great.
As a performer, I know when the applause has happened, that's it, you move on. Come on.
Meanwhile, this morning, the European Court of Justice ruled that, yes, Article 50 can be unilaterally withdrawn, and we keep all our previous rebates and deals just like that. Michael Gove... See that? We don't have the power to do that tonight. but I'm glad you're all behind us. Michael Gove and Shami Chakrabarty both immediately said it didn't matter, so it must matter. Roz, is it as simple as it seems? Would you retain all the benefits and the rebate and a deal which at the time, of course, you know, David Cameron's deal was criticised, but now, of course, looks like dreamland. Is it really as simple as that, that if there were the political will, you could just go, that's it?
Yes and no. No, but basically, what you've got to know about this is that it is to go back to status quo, basically, and to it is not the offer to extend Article 50. It's the offer to say, right, that's it. Well, no, we're staying in with everything that we had before, which is great because some people said that we wouldn't get all the things that we had before if we stayed in. So that's welcome news. But it doesn't give us a lot of time, does it? It doesn't give us a lot of time until March the 29th to decide whether we're going to remain in the EU. I mean, for us, of course, we don't need that time. But let's face it, you know, maybe the country does. Basically, it's now, if that's going to happen, either Parliament has to say we're going to remain. I don't think Parliament can do that by itself. Or there has to be a people's vote. Cheer, please. Yeah! Or there has to be a people's vote. And that has to happen in double quick time. So we can't have it before Christmas. And then, you know, January will kind of be knackered. So it's going to be February. Whoa, right. That's going to be really quite a tight timetable. Now, you could say that this shows that the European Court of Justice is showing willing. And maybe it would now be more willing to extend Article 50. I don't know if Ian has a view on whether that's more likely. And perhaps they would be prepared to help us space out this torture a little longer before, so that we can probably make up our minds. I'm really pleased that the ruling came, and I'm really pleased that it came now, because it's kind of we've got a sense of urgency now, and it's come at exactly the right time. And also it shows that the ECJ is not a really evil bogeyman which wants to stop Britain doing what it wants. It's actually saying, yeah, Britain, You can turn this round if you want. That's okay with us. That's cool. It's not stopping us from achieving our full sovereignty, actually. And that also is very good, though that's not how the Brexiteers will spin it. Does that answer your question?
It does.
Oh, good.
Completely. Ian, obviously we talk about, you know, leavers and remainers. And obviously there are, you know, very passionate people at the ends of both ends of the spectrum. How big do you think the sort of just exhausted middle, they just want it to go away? Like, if Theresa May was just like, I've got nothing left to lose, which, I mean, she doesn't really have much to lose. And she was just, oh, let's just do it, let's just revoke it.
It's huge.
Like, what kind of, there's this assumption there'd be this kind of huge kind of uprising of betrayal. Do you think actually a lot of people would just be like,
that's bollocks. Oh. I think riots in the streets is bollocks. I think very few people would know what they were rioting for, why they were rioting, what they wanted to achieve through the rioting. And okay, so, you know, we know that from France that people can riot a lot without being precisely sure what they want to achieve apart from cheaper fuel. But nonetheless, that isn't the way that Britain works. We tend not to riot. We prefer demonstrating, as we all know. And I don't think that there is an appetite in this country for mass civil disobedience for the sake of Brexit on the part of more than 2% of the population. That is my prediction, and I hope it's right.
So what do you think? I mean, would you agree? And what do you think the kind of... Because it would seem, on the face of it, to a lot of people, a sort of outrageous thing to do. You can see why people go, well, you can't just overturn the... Mm-hmm. But what do you think... How big do you think the consequences would be? I mean, it's not going to happen, we should say, is it?
What?
Like they're not just going to go, Theresa May's just going to come out and go, fuck it, let's do it. Sorry, I didn't know it was that easy.
So spontaneous. Yeah, yeah, do
she's
it.
She's just like, whatever, man, I went for a long walk.
In Switzerland.
And Philip was just like, just fuck it, Tess, do it. Like, it's probably not going to happen. But, I mean, is it kind of conceivable that it could happen without dire consequences?
Yeah, I think it could. I also think that you're right to separate out that thing of, like, anger over overturning and the other of just wanting it to go away. And there's a reason that May has just focused relentlessly on that message, just being like, this is how we just bring the argument to a halt, we start healing the division, all of this kind of stuff, that people do want the whole thing to go away. The trouble is, you know, you can't, I don't want to sound like the Rolling Stones, you can't always have what you want. And if you start fucking in the engine room of a country, then it doesn't go away very, very quickly. In fact, it takes a really, really long time to do this stuff. Like, even obviously, the quickest way to make it go away is to hold another referendum to reverse the decision. But that doesn't put away the sort of the social and the political and the emotional and the tribal sort of demons that have come out the box. If you do May's plan, you're looking at, you know, at least 7 years, probably more, if you put through sort of negotiation, implementation, ratification, and then, of course, trying to get trade deals somewhere else, and then just the general implications of just being a bit poorer and a bit less powerful and a bit meaner and a bit more inward-looking. If you were to do no deal, we'd be looking at the effects for the rest of our lives. And so the truth is, people have to... It's sort of like you just have to... You can't just look them in the eyes and go, we can make it go away, because we can't. It's not going to go away. This is going to be the thing that we're talking about for years, no matter what happens now. And anyone that claims otherwise to them is just trying to take that emotional need and use it for their own political calculations to go, I've got the one with the solution that'll make it go away. And they are always, always, no matter what side they're on, they're lying.
And also, I have to say, as much as I, over the years, have just thought, God, can't someone just make it stop? And sort of wanting to have a government that will go, you know what, we've taken it all into consideration, but you are wrong, and so we're not going to do it. We're beyond that point now, and you cannot, even if Theresa May, which would never happen, was like, you know what, fuck it, I'm just going to stop it. I don't think that's not a good idea. You can't have lied to a country and gone for 2.5 years or whatever and said, this is all going to be fine, it's going to be brilliant, and then suddenly go, no, made a mistake, I'm going to stop it. You have to bring the people with you, and you have to talk, and this is why she's been so duplicitous, as they all have, in this, is that they have not been honest with the people at any point, at any stage. So you can't just suddenly overnight go, actually, we were lying, it's actually really hard, so we're going to stop it. There has to be some kind of process. You have to work on the hearts and minds of people again. Otherwise, yeah, we'll be... riots, I mean, I remember... the riots, was it Mark Duggan thing? But I remember there were riots, I remember, on my street. And I've said jokingly I would riot if there was a no deal. And I sort of mean that, actually. If there was a no deal and we crash out, and I don't mean riot, I'm not going to... Okay, what's rioting?
I mean raise your voice.
A bloody angry protest. Yeah. a sweary placard.
I use all caps on Twitter for a week.
You know, I do that all the time anyway.
I'm not going to take it anymore.
But yeah, as much as I would have loved a magic wand solution, it can't happen, I don't think. Yeah.
Can we just ask, before we move on... this idea of remain and reform, which of course is one of the things that we talk about as a people's vote option to try and kind of win people who are more Eurosceptic over to the remain cause. What do you think, I mean, whether it would be revoking Article 50, whether it be the people's vote going the right way, is the rest of the EU up for this idea of being reformed with Britain going, we're going to be at the centre and we're going to help change you? Like, have we squandered a little goodwill?
I mean, you'd need a complete regime change, wouldn't you, to be taken seriously? So it wouldn't just be a question of us revoking Article 50. You'd need to change everybody that had anything to do with this whole debacle to untaint ourselves, I think. So what would that look like? A Corbyn-led government. Yeah, what would that look like?
But it wouldn't be a Corbyn-led government because he doesn't like the EU very much.
No, exactly. I don't know.
I think it's... I would never underestimate the anger that led to the Brexit vote. I would never underestimate how pissed off people are. I think what they're angry with is not the EU. I think they were angry with things about the state of the country, about austerity, about all those kind of other things. And that is what has to be acknowledged and with what the Conservative Party cannot acknowledge. That is why, ultimately, I think Corbyn is in a stronger position, because he has answers to some of the questions which are not the EU and which people are concerned about. The Conservatives do not. And when I say answers, I'm not saying that they're necessarily going to work. I'm saying that he has those answers, and he has them ready, and he has the money for the NHS, and he has a social programme. And that, I think, will hold out a great deal of appeal if there it comes the crunch and we change government.
There is one concern I have, by the way, which is that the sort of regime change operates on both sides. And there are elections in May for the European Parliament. And I think that could go really fucking terribly wrong if you look at the kind of patterns of voting behaviour that's been happening over Europe. And the Europe that we see, you know, in June may be a pretty bleak one, to be honest. And I think Remainers need to start thinking emotionally how that's going to feel, because we're quite used to thinking the immovable force is that the EU talks like it's sane and we're the ones that have gone mad. It's quite possible that there'll be an awful lot of madness coming from Europe as well once we get into the summer. Just to cheer everyone up over there. That's
so depressed.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose, and you can see that I mean, I know it's not a move. It's certainly not a party. It's not even a movement. It doesn't seem to know what it wants. But the yellow vest movement, which is kind of spreading a little to other countries, just seems like there's a lot. We can be very inward looking and go, well, what's Britain going to do? What's our relationship with Europe? But obviously, there's fires to put out all across Europe.
I've never spoken to anyone in the EU that thought that it wouldn't have happened in their country if they'd held the kind of referendum that we held. Everyone in Europe thinks the same. So actually, the funny thing is that the sort of political level in Europe, there's not that much judgment over sort of the way the result went. There is of, they thought our political class were ultimately, had a sort of a kind of dull competence to them. And it turns out they are dull, but not competent. But nevertheless, in terms of...
The genius of Theresa May.
Yeah, I know, really, she ticks all the boxes. Like, but it definitely was the case that they think that there is a Western problem, you know, authoritarian, reactionary, sort of nativism, you know, that is well recognised. I'm not saying anything remarkable here. And they are aware that that is in all countries. And exactly, you look at the Yellow Jackets, you look right now at the way that people are trying to impose some kind of political meaning on what is going on in France, but it's actually pretty hard to do. There's a mixture of right and left, and it's a more instinctive, emotional sort of attitude. You know, this is not something that is constrained only to here. It's just that we are the ones that have managed to insert it directly into the way that our country operates on the most fundamental possible level.
Yeah, we did it better because we're better. Other people, they've got this political chaos floating around, but we distilled it. We put it into a syringe and we just injected it straight into the bloodstream. So, well done, Britain. Right, because it's Christmas, we've got presents under the tree for the panel with a question to answer for each of them. This time next year, those presents will be powdered egg or some second-hand toilet paper. Let me just check.
This is not usually how Christmas works, by the way. You get given a present and then made to answer a question.
Is it not in your house?
Not so much, actually.
This year, it will this year. This is going to be.
Oh, thank you for me. Thank you so much.
It's
no expense spares. Look at this. There's going to be a question in here.
I don't know. This is producer Andrew, so I don't know what's in it. It's a mystery.
Oh, it's a blue passport.
Your question is, what tips can you give British people going on the holidays in Europe next year, if we leave the EU?
Learn to swim, because there's no other way of getting to mainland Europe if we crash out with no deal after March 29th. I've looked into it. I thought, because obviously, as is well known by now, air travel will be compromised if we crash out without a deal. I thought I found a way around it. I was like, but what about Eurostar? It's a train. No, still the same. Apparently, still applies to trains. So you could swim across the channels. Just learn to swim really well.
There is a plus side, I found out, which is that if we do crash out and we become we have third country status, we get really cheap cigarettes and booze.
Oh, now you're
almost
talking.
Do you know that thing when you're used to, as someone who's an ardent Remainer, only seeing negatives in any article about Brexit? Like, why would anyone do this? Another thing. And then I read that thing about, but you would get cheap cigarettes and booze. And I was like, I had to reread it to make sure there was a plus side of Brexit. It's quite a big one, actually.
Maybe we should
do a
plus side of Brexit episode.
Yeah, the plus side of Brexit. Well, no, it's not. So that's the one good thing. But it's just going to be a bureaucratic nightmare, as all of it will be. And I know it's quite fun sometimes to go, oh, no deal, you have to get your dog shot before you go to... No, that's not quite... If you want to take it to France, he has to be dead for... And then it doesn't... But... And it sort of becomes almost like a gay. I quite enjoy it. I get quite into it. Like, oh my God, how much can Brexit fuck things up? And then you realise it's not a game. And also, this is why we're in trouble, because things like travelling abroad, it will just become a nightmare of red tape and queues, and you know, we'll still be able to do it, probably. It'll just take longer and be more inconvenient and annoying. We'll have to have visas to go to Europe And actually, that's not that much of a problem, because to go to America, you need a visa, and it doesn't take that long. You go on the internet, but it's just annoying. And actually, Naomi Smith, our Romaniac, she's here somewhere. Naomi, where are you? There you go. I can't. That's a very low voice, Naomi. Suddenly, she said she had a really good idea, which was that why don't we implement for a week. We should do a sort of Brexit scenario for a week, so that everyone would experience what it would actually be like. Just the day-to-day shit that we'd have to deal with if we crashed out of the EU. Because I think then after that week, people would be like, oh, you know what? That wasn't a good idea.
I would like to see some parallel... There's a lot of parallel universes that I'd just like to see. If we could make a decision based on... I'd have to hash out the scientific details of this. But if we could just travel to parallel timelines and just see what happens. Here's Labour's negotiating a deal, here's no deal.
Really good episode of Doctor Who.
It would be a good,
really good
informative, educational episode of Doctor Who,
but
where it's just like the planet of the no-deal Brexit. Oh, Doctor, help! There's no toilet paper and lots of red tape.
but again... You know, looking into when I was looking into all the shit that you'd have to deal with if you try and travel post Brexit, post a No Deal Brexit, what's really struck me was that the people that I trust and that are the most are sort of showing themselves to be the people that in this whole process I go, oh, thank God for you, thank God you exist, are lawyers, interestingly, and it's you know, like Julian Morm, who's the chap who essentially, there you go. Has fought valiantly to sort of make it possible for us to revoke, you know, unilaterally revoke Article 50. And if you look at actually the people in the Conservative Party, who Anna Soubry and Dominic Grieve, and they're weird, and then the people in sort of People's Vote campaign, Chuka Umunna and David Lammy, they're all lawyers. Because they get it. They understand that Brexit is boring. It's about detail. Being in the EU is so boring. It's like... But the people who want to leave are these glib sort of chancers who don't care about detail and the boring stuff, and they want to gloss over it, and that's why we're in this mess, because you have to believe the boring people.
That's good. And us, who are not boring, also.
I wasn't saying about you.
Oh, I'm boring now.
No, that's not what I
mean. No, we're going to take a short 15-minute break so you can get a drink and try and organise a foolproof campaign to secure and win a people's vote. Don't forget to check out our Romaniacs Christmas market in the foyer with lovely presents for the Remainer in your life and passive-aggressive gifts for the Brexiter. All made in Leave Voting Bradford, because no hard feelings. We'll see you in about 15 minutes. Thank you.